Welcome to SNC's podcast series, SNC Critical Insights. I'm Amanda Houle. I'm special counsel in SNC's litigation group and national security practice. I recently came back to SNC after spending 8 years at the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York, where I was co-chief of the national security unit there. Let me introduce our panelists, all who are members of our national security practice and our litigation group, and I'll describe some of their specific expertise. Sharon Cohen-Levin is a leading expert on anti-money laundering, Bank Secrecy Act, and forfeiture matters. She previously led the Money Laundering and Asset Forfeiture Unit at the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York for 20 years. Nikki Friedlander is co-head of our cybersecurity practice. Nikki previously served for more than 8 years at the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York, including as chief of the Complex Frauds and Cybercrime Unit there. And Tony Lewis, who is also co-head of our cybersecurity practice. Tony joined the firm after 10 years at the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of California, where he served as Deputy Chief of the Terrorism and Export Crime Section. Sharon, Nikki, and Tony all bring that expertise to representing a diverse group of clients in connection with criminal, regulatory, and enforcement actions, as well as internal investigations. And Nikki and Tony also advise on cybersecurity issues, including incident response. So today, during this podcast, we're going to talk through three significant developments in national security enforcement over the last 18 months. And before we do that, we thought it would be helpful to start with just a few seconds of background for our listeners, some context on national security as a significant enforcement priority for DOJ. So national security has been a focus throughout the tenure of the Deputy Attorney General, Lisa Monaco, and we're going to cover today some specific things that she has said about that. DAG Monaco has a national security background. She served in roles at the FBI. She served as the Assistant Attorney General for National Security. She served as Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor to the President, and she's also been a professor of national security law. And as DAG, she's been clear about not only the importance she places on national security enforcement, but also how broadly the department views the scope of what qualifies as a national security case. Any case that involves cross-border criminal conduct may be in scope as a national security case for this Department of Justice. So sanctions or export controls evasion, foreign agent registration, international money laundering, international drug trafficking, cyber intrusions, international corruption, terrorism financing, support for terrorism. Those are just examples of the types of cases that fall within the ambit of DOJ national security cases. So with that background, we're going to turn to the first development in national security enforcement that we'll cover today. And that is the emphasis on corporate resolutions for national security offenses. This focus on corporate resolutions in the national security space has been a consistent focus for DOJ since late 2022, when it announced a significant corporate resolution. And so, Tony, we're hoping you can jump in here. Perhaps you could start by just explaining what that corporate resolution was and a bit about the case.
Sure. DOJ kicked off this messaging at the end of 2022 with that first ever corporate resolution to a material support of terrorism offense. That resolution was with Lafarge, and as part of that resolution, Lafarge pleaded guilty and agreed to pay more than $750 million. The facts involved Lafarge paying ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, and ANF, the al-Nusra Front, both designated terrorist organizations, through intermediaries in exchange for permission to operate a cement plant in Syria. According to the resolution, that plant allowed Lafarge to earn more than $70 million in revenue. The payments at issue were made to get through checkpoints and as taxes to ISIS, who controlled that area. This is a prominent example of DOJ expanding the scope of corporate enforcement into the realm of core national security issues.
And Tony, other than this being sort of a unique use of the material support statute, do you see any other takeaways for companies looking at this case?
Yeah, it's also an example of what evolving risk looks like for companies operating in high-risk jurisdictions. The fact pattern here is similar to FCPA-like bribery conduct, but the focus now by law enforcement and DOJ is on these bribery or facilitation cases in areas of the world where local governance, whether official or de facto, is under a terrorist organization.
And that resolution was late 2022. Following pretty soon after that, in March 2023, DOJ's National Security Division issued a policy called NSD Enforcement Policy for Business Organizations, which has been revised recently. Could you talk us through what that policy is at a high level and how it fits into this national security enforcement framework?
Yeah, the policy is largely consistent with other DOJ policies and seeks to incentivize companies to self-disclose potential violations of export controls or sanctions, and to fully cooperate and take appropriate remediation measures. There are, however, a few issues that make this policy distinct in the national security context. So first, the explicit consideration of whether the conduct presented a grave threat to national security, such as the involvement of designated terrorists or terrorist organizations. Second, whether the conduct involved the export of items that are particularly sensitive, consistent with other efforts by DOJ and the Department of Commerce to focus on strategic technologies. Third, whether the company has previous violations of national security laws, including not just criminal violations, but administrative violations, which would include those brought by the Department of Commerce, the Department of State, or the Department of Treasury. And fourth, whether the violations involving sanctions or export controls were actively concealed by other serious criminal activity, like fraud or corruption.
Okay, so having talked through DOJ's emphasis on corporate resolutions in the national security space, a fair question seems to be, Tony, what has this meant in practice? Can you talk a bit about what DOJ has said about the results here?
In a September 2023 speech by Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General Marshall Miller, he noted that since last June, the majority of our major corporate criminal resolutions have implicated United States national security. And this number has more than doubled from 2022 to 2023. Put simply, the trend is real, it is accelerating, and at DOJ, we're dedicating the resources necessary to counter the threat. His message was echoed the next month by Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, who pointed to that Lafarge resolution, and also to DOJ's resolution with British American Tobacco for selling tobacco in North Korea, that allowed the regime to generate revenue to support its nuclear programs, and to DOJ's resolution with Suez Rajan for sanctions violations stemming from its sales and transport of Iranian oil. She emphasized that for corporations, national security compliance risks are widespread and should be, quote, at the top of every company's compliance risk chart.
Thank you for that, Tony. We're going to turn to the second development that we'll cover today, and it's something that you just touched on, Tony, with that quote from Marshall Miller. It's the surge in resources at DOJ to the National Security Division. In concert with making these announcements that you just described, Tony, about the focus of national security enforcement, DOJ has announced fairly significant changes to the size and structure of certain components of the National Security Division. With that, I'm going to turn to Nikki. What have we seen on this front in terms of this surge in resources?
The Justice Department's National Security Division named recently its first ever Chief Counsel for Corporate Enforcement. And the person they named for the position is the prosecutor who led the Lafarge case. the goal of the position, the whole job, will be to set priorities to push corporate resolutions in this area. So that's a significant development. The Justice Department has also added 25 attorneys to focus exclusively on national security-related economic crimes. So we should expect more subpoenas, new investigations, and a greater focus in this area. Similarly, the DOJ has expanded its bank integrity unit, also historically an active unit, now expanded with a number of new prosecutors who will target national security-related financial misconduct, including money laundering, sanctions-related offenses, and BSA matters. The DOJ has also redesigned its cybersecurity enforcement program. It announced this year, just recently, the first ever national security cyber section within the Justice Department. The section will serve as a kind of incubator that's able to invest in the time-intensive and generally complex investigative work of cyber cases.
Can you speak a bit, Nikki, about what that means in practice? Let's start with the redesigning of the National Security Cyber Section. What do you see as the significance of that?
Yeah, I think two things are significant. The first is really conceptual. The redesigning of the section is a recognition from the highest levels of the U.S. government that cybercrime has become a critical means by which hostile nation states are advancing their interests against the U.S. and harming the country. So North Korea, for example, funds its nuclear and ballistic weapons programs by hacking. China has built its technology and defense industries in significant part by hacking our industries. And Russia and Iran use cybercrime to threaten physical harm to the U.S. and other countries, hacking power plants, for example. So it's not a surprise that DOJ sees the need now to invest the time and the resources in a group that will be focused exclusively on these problems. The second point about the new National Security Cyber Section is a more practical one. The Justice Department has made some significant national security cyber cases recently. It has disrupted crypto exchanges that were laundering proceeds for hackers associated with hostile nation states. And it has disrupted ransomware groups that have harmed companies across the United States and public sector entities, hospitals, for example, across the country. Many of those ransomware groups are associated in particular with the Russian government. The Justice Department has learned through those investigations that nation-state-sponsored cybercrime is very complicated to challenge. It takes a big investment of time and experience to disrupt. Local U.S. attorney's offices and local FBI offices, for the most part, prosecute federal cybercrimes in the U.S. They have many, many cases. They have many investigations to deal with. And they generally just don't have the time and the resources to invest multiple people for multiple years to investigate any one crime. So the new National Security Cyber Section is designed to invest that kind of time and resources that are necessary, that are really critical to build these kinds of cases.
Thank you for that, Nikki. We're going to turn to our third and final development that we'll cover today, and that is the enhanced focus by DOJ on coordinating with regulatory partners to pursue these national security priorities. And one big piece of that was that in March 2023, DOJ, the Department of Commerce, and the Department of Treasury released the first ever Tri-Seal compliance note for companies. It was announced as a cracking down on third-party intermediaries used to evade Russia-related sanctions and export controls. And it was really focused on the responsibility for financial institutions and other U.S. businesses to enhance their vigilance against entities or individuals that were trying to evade sanctions and export control laws. A major focus of that announcement was this series of red flags that were highlighted, particularly for financial institutions. Sharon, can you talk a bit about that?
Certainly. So the Departments of Justice, Commerce, and Treasury in the Tri-Seal compliance note provided a series of red flags that which they stated may indicate that a third-party intermediary is engaged in an effort to evade sanctions or export controls. And these red flags include using shell companies to obscure ownership, source of funds, or countries involved, reluctance to share information about a product's end use, using shell companies to conduct international wire transfers, declining customary installation, training, or maintenance of the purchased items, IP addresses that do not correspond to a customer's reported location data, last-minute changes to shipping instructions, payment from third-party sources not listed on the end-user form, using personal email accounts or residential addresses, changes to standard letters of engagement that obscure the ultimate customer, transactions involving entities with little or no web presence, or routing purchases through transshipment points commonly used to illegally redirect items to Russia or Belarus, such as China, Armenia, Turkey, or Uzbekistan. These three agencies, Justice, Commerce, and Treasury, have made clear that the use of third-party intermediaries to evade sanctions and export controls will be a focus of their enforcement actions.
Thank you, Sharon. Another significant development in these national security-focused partnerships for DOJ has been the launch of the Disruptive Technology Strike Force. Sharon, can you speak to that new program?
Yes. In February of 2023, the Department of Justice and the Department of Congress launched the Disruptive Technology Strike Force. And the purpose is to protect advanced technology from unlawfully being acquired by foreign adversaries. And it's led by the Department of Justice's National Security Division and the Department of Commerce's Bureau of Industry and Security. And this strike force brings together experts from the FBI, Homeland Security Investigations, and more than 15 U.S. attorney's offices, including ones with particularly active national security units. And the strike force is focused on targeting exports and supply chain acquisitions by corporate entities with the goal of preventing sensitive technologies from reaching authoritarian regimes and hostile nation states. The task force is drawing on the resources of all of these agencies, but also building within the strike force new accountability mechanisms. These include things like regular strike force updates, reports on the statistics, and strike force cases are watched closely. The strike force just held a 2-day conference where all the case teams met and presented on their cases and their progress. And of particular significance, the strike force will make use of the Department of Commerce's new voluntary self-disclosure program. Just a little bit about that program. In April of 2023, the Department of Commerce unveiled a new voluntary self-disclosure program, which included several new features: a dual tracking system for minor or technical violations, treating deliberate non-disclosure of a violation as an aggregating factor, and providing credit for disclosing the violations of others. I'm not going to say any more about this today because the Commerce's voluntary self-disclosure program will be the focus of our next podcast. So we hope that you will join us for that podcast. The Disruptive Technology Strike Force has already brought several cases. To date, they principally focused on individuals. In February of 2024, the Deputy Attorney General, Lisa Monaco, described the first-year achievements of the strike forces, including arrests of more than a dozen corporate executives, engineers, distributors, and other high-profile targets from across the world, and the issuance of denial orders against 29 businesses, including defense companies, airlines, freight forwarders, cutting off their access to U.S. technology.
Great. Thank you, Sharon. Well, before we wrap up in our last minute or so here, it would be great to hear from you, Sharon, just a brief comment on what you think companies should be taking away from the developments that we've discussed today.
So I think it's pretty clear from what we've been saying, national security enforcement is a major priority for the Department of Justice, as well as the other agencies. But with respect to the Department of Justice, I think we're going to expect to see a series of cases coming up in 2024 And at a minimum, we anticipate that we're going to see an increasing number of investigations of corporate national security offenses in 2024. Issues that have historically been thought of as principally in scope for administrative resolutions are now considered a Department of Justice priority and subject to criminal investigation and prosecution, particularly with respect to export control violations and sanctions violations. So this leads to the importance of risk assessments of a global business. You can't think about national security risk as fitting into any particular bucket. Risk is infused across a global business. Effective compliance programs should employ a risk-based approach that incorporates these types of risk assessments, as well as management commitment, internal controls, testing, auditing, training, and companies should tailor their controls to the specific risks affecting them, such as the issue of third-party intermediaries diversion. In assessing risk, it's also important to think about intersections with geographic areas and regimes that are the focus of enforcement. Some best practices include screening new and existing customers against restricted party lists, conducting risk-based due diligence on counterparties, and paying attention to the guidance issued by Treasury and Commerce, such as the red flags I just spoke of. While these compliance tools are familiar ones, companies should be sensitive to employing these tools in the right places across a global business. And given the interagency push and the nature of national security enforcement, companies will want to have a team advising them that has expertise and credibility across these areas. Sanctions, anti-money laundering, export controls, illicit financing, cyber, both from a regulatory and an enforcement perspective.
All right. Well, thank you, Sharon. We appreciate those insights. And thank you to everyone on the panel. And thank you for those who are listening to SNC Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.sulcrom.com.